So first of all, I would just like to thank the organizers and everyone for inviting me and for showing up after a short lunch break for this talk. The title of this talk is Bilinear and Quadratic Lewitt-Offord Lemmas, but I'd like to actually start by going back to the original Lewitt-Offord problem or Lewitt-Offord Lemma. So back in the 1940s, Lewitt and Offord were considering the question of how many roots of a random polynomial are real. And essentially one of the questions they had to solve to answer this is sort of this question as to how concentrated random walks are. So let's suppose that we have a list of n fixed real numbers. And we're going to consider all the sums of the form plus or minus a1, plus or minus a2, etc., up to plus or minus an. Alternatively, we can think of the signs here as being random variables. And what we're asking is how concentrated this random variable given by the sum of epsilon I ai is. How likely is it to equal any one value? And this question was answered by Erdős, who showed that essentially this concentration probability is at most 1 over root n, or more exactly, at most n choose n over 2 of the sums are equal to any given value. And this bound is actually tight. Equality can hold, for example, if all of the ai are equal to 1, in which case, for example, the concentration happens when exactly half the variables are 1 and half the variables are negative 1. So we have a tight lemma. The next thing we want to do is actually still improve it. And the way we're going to improve it is we're going to start making stronger and stronger assumptions on these coefficients. So we're asking how likely is it that a random sum concentrates at one value, and we know that the concentration is at most n to the minus a half, and furthermore that this equality is happening when all the ai are equal. So let's make the opposite assumption. Let's assume that all the ai are different. Then as a result of Sarkozy and Semeretti, that instead of an n to the minus 1 half concentration, you get an n to the minus 3 halves concentration. And more generally, there's a Fourier analytic technique of Hallas that can show that if we sort of assume that our variables are k disassociated in a certain sense, that if we assume that there aren't any solutions to, for example, a1 plus a2 equals a3 plus a4, then what happens is you get even a weaker concentration. In other words, if we assume that there are no k-size collisions, the probability drops below n to the minus k. And really, these results are special cases of this sort of underlying heuristic, that the more concentrated the sums are, the more structure we have to assume for the coefficients. In other words, if we have very unstructured coefficients, the sum is going to be very dispersed. If we have more structured coefficients, we can hope for a more concentrated sum. And there's a result of this lines by Tao and Vu that says, essentially, if we have polynomial concentration, then the coefficients all have to lie in an arithmetic progression. So, for example, if we have the sum plus or minus 1, plus or minus 2, plus or minus n. That's polynomially concentrated. Or if we have just anything along those lines. But if we have sort of very dispersed, very unstructured coefficients, then what happens is that the sum becomes less concentrated. Now what we'd like to do is we'd like to generalize this sort of observation, or at least generalize the original Lewitt-Offord lemma to higher degree forms. So for example, let's suppose that instead of a linear form, we had a bilinear form. That is to say, we're looking at, instead of one set of n variables, we have two sets of n variables, and we're looking at what in matrix form would be x transpose ay instead of ay. We're looking at this double sum of aij, xi, and xj. And what we'd like to do is to bound the probability that this sum is equal to a single value. Now, as it turns out, this problem is not too hard. So what you can do is you can view this bilinear form as essentially two nested linear forms. So you say, instead of viewing this as a double sum, we'll view it as a single sum over the x's, where we get the coefficients coming from the y. In other words, it's a linear form whose coefficients are themselves linear forms. And now we just use the Lewitt-Offord lemma twice. wants to say many of these new coefficients that come from the y's are probably not zero, and wants to say that, therefore, our original linear form will not, our original bilinear form will not be concentrated, because we can think of it as a linear form with non-zero coefficients by first exposing the y's and getting the coefficients, then exposing the x's. So we used the Lewitt-Alford lemma, and each time we used it, we know that the failure probability is only about 1 over root n, because that's the concentration of a linear form. So therefore, this gets us about an n to the minus 1/2 concentration overall for the bilinear form. Now, is this the right answer? Well, yes and no. It is the right answer if you're just looking for the correct answer, because there are bilinear forms where the probability that the bilinear form is zero is about 1 over root n. For example, we can view this form maybe as one that factors into two linear forms. In that case, it's going to be zero whenever one of the factors is zero. On the other hand, in a certain sense, it's not the correct answer. And there's this intuition that was suggested to me by Andrew Granville that says why it's not the wrong answer. So let's suppose we had a bilinear form, and we just put in small integers as the coefficients. Then what we would expect is, on random input, a linear form is a random walk, and that gets us about root n away from zero. A bilinear form is sort of two random walks, and that gets us about n away from zero on average if we have n variables. So if we're n away from zero and we don't assume some sort of higher structure, then what we would expect is we'd expect the concentration to be about 1 over n instead of 1 over root n. So the question I'd like to ask is sort of this degeneracy the only reason that that intuition is wrong? In other words, we expected, just by looking at the variance, that we'd have a concentration about 1 over n. If we have a concentration that's significantly larger than 1 over n, is it true that this bilinear form is somehow close to being degenerate? And we have some sort of partial answer along those lines. So as I said, we can view our bilinear form as sort of x transpose by, where B is a fixed matrix and X and Y are random. If our form was degenerate, then what that would mean would be that the matrix B would be of rank 1, because the form would factor. So what we'd like to say is, we'd like to say that if the bilinear form is concentrated, this matrix is close to rank 1, and the way we want to say close to rank 1 is we want to say we can find an abnormally large rank 1 submatrix hiding inside it. Another way of thinking about this is to say that if we were to get rid of some of the variables, if we were to expose them, treat them as constant and whatnot, then the remaining form would still factor. And the partial result along this line is that, remember that sort of the worst case is n to the minus 1/2, and that's when the form completely factors. So here we're saying if it's close to n to the minus 1/2, then say n to the minus 1/2 minus epsilon, then we can find a rank 1 submatrix whose size depends on epsilon. So it'll be a size n in one set of variables, and n to the 1 minus 2 epsilon in the other set of variables. So in the extreme case, this gets us almost the full matrix. As epsilon gets closer and closer to 1/2, as we get closer and closer to that 1 over n bound, which we think is normal, then we get a weaker and weaker inverse result. We get a smaller and smaller rank 1 submatrix. And if I had to hazard a guess, I would actually say that for any epsilon less than 1/2, in other words, if I'm significantly larger than 1 over n, I should be able to find maybe an n minus log n by n minus log n rank 1 submatrix hiding inside B. And is this tight in the sense of epsilon less than 1/2? Yes, because if, for example, I just took B to equal just sort of this random matrix of ones and twos, then my concentration probability will be about 1 over n, and my rank 1 submatrix will only be of size log n. So I can't expect any sort of rank 1 submatrix that have concentration about 1 over n or less. Now, just to give a rough idea as to how we might prove this sort of inverse result, let's go through the argument that got us n to the minus 1/2 but be a little bit more careful. So remember that we're viewing our bilinear form as two nested linear forms. And we're essentially using the Lilliput-Alford lemma twice to say the first linear form is not concentrated, that gets many coefficients are not zero, and the second linear form, therefore, will not be zero. But let's suppose that one of these two steps is sort of close to equality. Then what that means is what will have to happen is either we look at just BY, and there will be some good chance that a lot of the entries of BY are equal to zero. In other words, there's a good chance that a lot or almost all the coefficients of this set of linear forms will be equal to zero. Now remember that each of our coefficients is unlikely to be zero. If I look at a single GI, a single linear form, then it's coming from, as I said, a linear form with a lot of non-zero coefficients, and therefore we expect it to be unlikely to be zero. So generally what we'd expect is we'd expect it to be very unlikely that many of these linear forms will equal to zero at the same time. But one case where they could be equal at the same time is if, for example, all these linear forms are multiples of each other. So, for example, I'm requiring both the variables to sum to zero and twice the variables to sum to zero and three times the variables to sum to zero and so on. In other words, we want these events, GI equals zero, to be highly correlated with each other. And it turns out that the way that happens is if the corresponding rows of B are very close to being multiples of each other. On the other hand, maybe it's possible that we have a lot of non-zero G sub I, but the linear form is highly structured. Then you can apply these sorts of inverse results, the Hallows-type results, and say that, for example, if we have a lot of pairs of equal GI, then many pairs of rows are close to being equal. And again, so we can leverage either of these two cases into a large rank one submatrix. So that's what's going on with bilinear forms. Now let's ask the same question for quadratic forms, where we actually get an even weaker answer. So here we just have a quadratic form, double sum aij, xi, xj. We're still assuming that all the xi's are these Bernoulli plus minus one random variables. But now we're assuming that it's a quadratic form, and we're still going to assume that most of the aij are non-zero. So we want to know what is the concentration of this quadratic form. So one approach to this is to sort of decouple this quadratic form so we can only have to look at a bilinear form. And there's an argument using the Cauchy-Schwarz inequality that says essentially the concentration of quadratic form squared is at most the concentration of a bilinear form, where the bilinear form just sort of comes from the interaction between half the variables and the other half. And if we know that a bilinear form is n to the minus a half, then this immediately gets us an n to the minus a fourth concentration on quadratic forms. So, on the other hand, it should be n to the minus a half. Sort of what feels like the extreme case is if we have, again, a quadratic form that factors, and therefore the probability that the quadratic form is zero is the same as the probability that a linear form is zero, which is about n to the minus a half. So it is actually possible to improve this minus a fourth to get not all the way to n to the minus a half, but to get closer to n to the minus a half. And the idea is sort of to use these inverse results for a bilinear form. So if we just look at this sort of inequality, this says that we're bounding quadratic forms probability by a bilinear forms probability. And somehow, if the bilinear form is close to n to the minus a half, then it should be highly structured, then that should mean that the quadratic form is also highly structured. So let's assume sort of an extremely strong structure. Let's assume that actually we can sort of almost factor a matrix. In other words, we're going to view a quadratic form as being sort of a form on two sets of variables. And we're going to say that the interaction between the two sets is as simple as it can possibly be. In other words, if we look at the matrix A, where a quadratic form is X transpose AX, then we're going to assume that the upper right half corner of this matrix is entirely ones.
In terms of our quadratic form, what this means is that the form can factor in a certain strong sense. We can divide variables up into two classes, y and z, so that the interaction between y and z factors because of this rank one assumption. And on the other side, we get stuff just involving y and stuff just involving z. And those two things don't interact with each other. Now, we can actually have viewed our original quadratic form problem, the problem, is this quadratic form equal to C, as an incidence problem. The trouble is that the incidence is occurring in r to the 2n, and it's just too many dimensions to make good use of incidence theorems. But if we use this additional assumption, if we assume that this form is close to factoring in this bilinear versus quadratic sense, then what happens is it becomes an incidence problem in the plane. And you can use, maybe not the original summary trotter, but this weighted summary trotter theorem, essentially a rescaling of a result of Yusevich, Konyagin, Rudinev, and Ten, to say that the probability that this happens is at most n to the minus the third. Sort of, I guess, normal summary trotter gives an upper bound on the number of incidences between a set of points and a set of lines. If you scale it down, you can view it as saying if you pick a random line and a random point, they're not likely to be incident. And that's really where this is coming from. Now, of course, we don't actually have a matrix of this form in general. But what our bilinear result says is that somehow the quadratic forms that are most likely to be zero or most likely to be concentrated in one value are in some sense close to this extreme example. And we can combine that with the n to the minus the third bound in this extreme example to get an n to the minus 3/10 bound. Not n to the minus the half, which is what we think the correct answer is, but closer. And I'd like to, I guess, just mention one sort of application of this result. Suppose we just took a random Bernoulli matrix. That is to say, for each entry, we flipped a coin, making each entry independently either 1 or negative 1. Now, and then we're going to make this additional assumption that we're going to make the matrix symmetrized by assuming that the Qij is equal to Qji. Then what happens is you can view the determinant of this matrix as a quadratic form in the entries of any single row or column. If it was a normal matrix, if it wasn't symmetric, it would be a linear form. Our symmetry assumption just makes it a quadratic form. And applying this lemma, quadratic lemma, and combining it with an argument of Komlosch gives that this symmetric matrix is almost surely non-singular. And the same is true pretty much for any symmetric matrix whose entries are sufficiently random. Okay. Thank you very much. So what about higher degree forms? So what we expect, what we can prove is that this was not staged, I promise you. What we can prove is that if you consider, say, a multilinear form, the exact same argument says that probability that a multilinear form is concentrated is about n to the minus 1/2 at most. And a similar argument can say that the probability a quadratic form is concentrated, or sorry, a higher polynomial is concentrated, is, well, we can't prove n to the minus a half. We can prove n to some power where the power depends on k and goes to zero very quickly. We suspect the answer should be is in both of these cases, it should be n to the negative k over 2, unless this polynomial or this bilinear form is very close to factoring. Yes? Yeah, it's an analog, but it drops off as something like n to the negative 1 over 2 to the k squared. So it really goes to zero quickly with k. Yeah.